Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. Sitting across from me is my co-host, Mike Cosentino.
Co-hosting over here is Mike Cosentino, yes, for sure. We are doing Democratic Perspective in a really, really democratic way this morning. We got the executive director of the Arizona Democratic Party. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there is a leader or two. There's a state chair and an executive director of the Democratic Party. Sheila Healey just came fresh from the Democrats of the Red Rocks breakfast, and we snagged her for the show this morning. So we have so many questions. We have so many things we want to talk to Sheila about.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, and can we say it? What the hell are you doing in Arizona if you're a Democrat, you know?
Hi. Yeah, no, absolutely. Thank you for having me on. So I am new to this position. I just got here in mid-August. And I come most immediately from Texas, where I was the coordinated campaign director for the Texas Democratic Party.
That liberal hotbed of Texas.
Ah, yes. I like to think of it as more of a long game. But originally I come from New York. I grew up in New York City, and I got started working in politics on the 2007, during the 2007 primaries for Obama. Basically what I did is I walked into the, one of the Obama offices in New York one day, and I asked them if they needed any help, and they put me on the phones, and I started making phone calls, and I fell in love with everybody in the room. I loved that everyone was there for different reasons, supporting the same causes, supporting this great man who was running on such an incredible platform and was going to bring change. So I started traveling with him. I went to New Hampshire, Maryland, Pennsylvania, Texas. I wound up being offered a job in Ohio for the general election. And from there, I was really hooked. So after...
What year was this, Sheila?
This was in 2008.
Okay.
So after the 2008 elections, I didn't want to stop that momentum. So if you remember, the Senate race in Georgia was happening. So I worked on trying to get Jim Martin elected. We were unsuccessful, unfortunately. But then after that, I managed a nonprofit in Connecticut. I worked on LGBT issues in California. And then I started getting nervous about the reelection. So I went on back to Florida and, worked on President Obama's second campaign. And after...
Cool.
After that, I worked for the DCCC, working on congressional races in the Northeast, and I got a call from Texas. There was a new chair. The Texas Democratic Party had had a lot of historical instability that had happened over the course of the preceding 20 years, and there really hadn't been a party for a very long time. There was bankruptcy, there was debt, there was...
That happened to quite a few Democratic parties, particularly in the South, in Mississippi and Alabama and stuff. They had faded to being, somebody told us, I think it was Howard Dean told us that they had faded to being a file cabinet, really. And mm-hmm. in some lawyer's office.
The state party were filed. We have had Howard Dean on the show, yeah. You are in good company. We just want to let you know.
Cool. I'm a big fan.
Good.
Yeah, it's something I've heard myself over and over again, and I see when all the state parties come together and I hear from the other executive directors, the party is in trouble. And we have to work and fight at the state level, for relevance again. We need to add value, in ways that we never have before and we never frankly had to before. The stakes have never been this high, I feel. In Texas,
I think I agree with you, and I think Mike and Silent Gary sitting over in the corner do too, that the coming election is extraordinarily important. It is crucial election coming up.
There's two things, Sheila, what we find hard to believe is the party that represents health care, represents jobs, represents education, represents women and equality struggles so mightily. It goes back to a messaging thing. You did have a messaging question this morning, and we want to talk about that. But the second thing I want to do is a little bit of an insider thing. Amy Keegan came was Obama's Organizing for America representative here in Sedona in 2008.
She's one of my best friends.
Oh, no. Oh, how cool is that? But one of the things I want to say, if that's relevant, that's wonderful to hear, by the way, and please say hello for me. She said that one of the things you're going to notice as you travel the state of Arizona is the age of the people you're standing in front of and speaking. Now, I'm talking Democrats here. Or at least people that show up to Democratic meetings. Now, I'm going to bet you at least a third of those people at that meeting this morning were Republicans. Do I think that Republicans come to Democratic meetings? Yes, I do. Because they're so fed up with the Republican leadership of this state and on a national level. Now, they won't change parties for God knows what reason. But Amy told me that her best worker, campaign worker in Denver when she was there in 06 or whatever it was 80 years old. I know you're new, but I'm going to put this in a form of a comment rather than a question and then let you respond. Do you have any plans or experience? I think you're going to need to harness the older voter, the older activists, such as are in this room, by the way.
Particularly Gary sitting
particularly
up in the
Gary,
corner.
If you're going to have anybody help you with your really difficult task.
Definitely. So Amy's absolutely right. The average age of not just a volunteer who comes for a canvas one time or two times, but a regular volunteer is 77.
Wow.
Is that nationwide or Arizona-wide? Or
wow. Let me say that again. Jeez.
That was a test we did several years ago when we analyzed the data from the 2012 Obama campaign, and we looked at
I know when we were out canvassing, we were talking to Democrats down in Camp Verde, and the guy I was canvassing with, we invited a woman to join come up to a door breakfast. And I thought, first, she works full-time. And they're like two kids and three dogs, and her husband works full time, and they're commuting to a job in Sedona. Chances of getting her to do more than vote for Democrats is pretty small. And the other thing, and I guess that you may have heard, was that what did they register, Mike, up at NAU? They registered over 2,500 students, only 200 of which actually turned out and voted in the election. How do you deal with issues like this? People don't have time. They don't have, they're involved in their lives or they're just not motivated to turn out. They register and then particularly younger people don't vote. And so, and then it's left to old guys to be the activists.
Yeah, definitely. So I'll speak to the more general turnout question first, because obviously we just saw a year of low turnout in magnanimous proportions. And I think it's really, really important to look at what we did wrong and what we're not doing yet as a progressive community overall. Because, as I said this morning at the breakfast, we still don't know enough about why voters vote, how voters vote, and what brings somebody from supporter to voter. And something, you know, that we know right now is that it takes a huge voter contact program. Voter contact, direct voter contact, is the one way we know how to improve turnout. We need to have an effective message. We need to incorporate a lot of really important things into that voter contact program to make it effective. But at the end of the day, we don't know any other way besides having a personal conversation with a voter to encourage somebody from that supporter level to that voter level.
So by that, I want to define direct contact.
Yeah.
So that includes obviously knocking on a door, canvassing. So how about in front of a post office or a supermarket? Is that direct? Is that they consider that direct contact?
Well, it is direct contact.
That's almost impossible to get anymore in small towns or maybe even big towns. Politics, let alone Democratic politics, is people are afraid.
There's no public spaces either. So you're talking about telephone calls. You're talking about canvassing, somebody knocking on somebody's door and talking to a voter. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about, is there any other way to, does direct mail count if we send out the Democrats, the Red Rock sends out a flyer appealing to people to vote? Or is that not direct contact in your
direct mail does count, and mail still has an effect. A lot of folks, there's a common conception that out there that mail doesn't work anymore. Mail still is effective for older voters. Now, is it going to be as effective as a phone call? No. Is a phone call going to be as effective as a door knock? No.
Okay.
But in looking at what we have to do this year and the gap between, you know, winning statewide and not winning statewide and taking back the state Senate and not taking back the state Senate, we have to figure out how much money we have and what's the most effective use of that money. And the best use ultimately is going to be knocking on doors, making phone calls and registering voters. Voter registration is a really big part of this that I want to talk about. In Florida, with the Obama campaign, we registered, Amy Keegan and I were there together.
Is that right?
Yep.
All right.
We registered 360,000 voters, and we won by 70,000 votes. Now, that is a hard thing to do. It takes a lot of people.
What about the numbers here? Have you had a chance to look at the numbers here in Arizona?
Yep, I have. We need to register 211,000 voters to be viable statewide. And that's something we can do. We can do it together, but a lot of things you see as I go from state to state is we don't do a good enough job working together, and the party doesn't do a good enough job bringing everybody together to move in a unified direction to do what needs to be done. And you know, that's partly the wake of Citizens United, and it's partly not enough national investment happening into the state parties. But it needs to change, because over the past several years, We've seen an incredible drop in statewide wins and wins at the legislative level and the local level within the states.
What we see is that conservative organizations like Americans for Prosperity.
Outside money.
Yeah, they have money. They have professional organizers in our area. And, I mean, how many professional people work for the Democratic Party in Arizona? How many paid employees do you have as opposed to volunteers?
Well, if I do my job and I raise the money, we're going to need several hundred.
But how many do you have
now? Had a girl.
Oh, I'm saving up for March when we launch our organizers. Now we have seven.
That's twice as many as I thought you had. So that's great.
So what we see is heavily funded conservative organizations. The Tea Party is a partisan indigenous. Part of it is a people organization, and part of it is massive money coming into it,
right,
either by wealthy individuals here or by massive, you know, contributions open. How are you going to deal with that? I mean, the Democratic Party is a regular Democratic or a party, just like the Republican Party. You have certain rules. You have a certain structure. You have a certain job. How are you going to deal with people coming in from all different angles and trying to change things? And what I see is the conservatives are able to get into local races now, mm-hmm, in a way they didn't before, and they're willing to spend money. So if you spend a bunch of money in a city council race, you can have a lot of impact compared to trying to change things statewide.
So I think that the unregulated enormous streams of money is a huge problem, of course, in our campaign finance system. And I think that we need to be supportive of the groups that are fighting against that and fighting to pass more responsible laws. But I think at the same time, we have to make sure not to get too caught up in that in an election year, because frankly, it's gonna be a long game fight. It's an important fight to be supportive of, but we got to raise some money ourselves this year. And these streams of dark money, you know, they put negative ads on the airwaves. They put very destructive things in people's mailboxes. They discourage people from voting. They make people afraid to vote. And we have to fight back by running a big program ourselves, and making sure that, you know, we build the kind of expansive operation that communicates with people directly. That's why I bring it back to direct voter contact. A TV ad is one thing, but if somebody personally comes to your door and talks to you about Ann Kirkpatrick or the state Senate race in LD18 or LD6, that's going to be more effective overall in encouraging somebody to turn out.
NPR is saying, they said this morning that the difference that her anchor Patrick is 6 points away from Senator John McCain, our neighbor. What do you think? You got it? We got a shot?
Well, Ann's a neighbor too. She's Flagstaff, right? And
well, that's right.
We count her as a neighbor too.
That's right.
McCain has a house down the road.
Agreed.
As a pessimist who really likes numbers, I will say this race is absolutely viable. It's absolutely within our reach. McCain is polling at 50% disapproval rating.
Wow.
He's one of the most unpopular sitting U.S. senators in the country. And, you know, I think part of that is people are tired of the establishment. John McCain is the establishment.
Well, nobody more established than John. We're talking to Sheila Healy, executive director of the Arizona Democratic Party, who knows how important this next election is. But I do want to remind that and get her comment on that. We're talking this next president will be appointing at least two Supreme Court justices. We're talking about the end of abortion. We're talking about the end of we're talking about changes in Social Security. We're talking about changes in Medicare. Huge things in the next things that, quite frankly, many people think are really important and are engines of the economy. 211,000 Arizonans must register to vote. And if Sheila, if you can get hundreds of workers at the then I you hear right here on Chasm Radio, I will get you, I will pay for the dinner at any restaurant in Sedona, and you can take a friend of your choice. Two free dinners. Tom gives them away all the time. I'm going to actually go into his drawer and take a couple of out from there. But he doesn't have to know that. So that's you know, those numbers do sound doable. You know, 211,000 out of
6 million. I think we have in Arizona
2.6 million voters. I guess.
How many million? Voters, 4 million yeah. voters. No.
It's about 2.6. Yeah.
2.6.
Yeah. No, it's going to be hard.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. It's going to be something that Arizona has not been able to accomplish before. We've never run this level of expansive voter registration program, and this kind of investment has never been made in Arizona. Now, you know, is it going to be hard? Yes. Is it just as worthwhile an investment if you're looking at a national pool of money as Florida is? Absolutely.
Where's the money coming from?
I think it's the most important thing for a state party to build up their small donor basis.
Hmm.
We have a great group of Copper State leaders right now who give $1,000 or more on a sustaining basis to the party. And it's important that, you know, you make an investment in fundraising and have events throughout the state, not just have two dinners in Phoenix a year, but have a dinner in Tucson, maybe a dinner in Sedona, a dinner in Flagstaff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's really, really important to just make sure that we stay cognizant of the fact that we're the Democratic Party. This is the most naturally Democratic entity you can donate your money to because there's so many natural checks and balances within the party.
The next
and
thing
so
is
many
messaging.
People involved.
The messaging is, frankly, so bad. I mean, this is Gary's favorite subject, and one of the reasons he's staying away from the microphone because I know he's afraid of what he's going to say.
We're certainly afraid of what he's going to say, but that's usual. That's typical in the show. Or actually, we're more afraid of what you're going to say. But
well, yeah, you should be. I'm stuttering because I have there's so many things that I want to say that. But basically, the ADP, the Arizona Democratic Party's messaging seems so incredibly bad. I mean, it was like it was designed by the Goldwater Institute. They respond to nothing. They hang our Democratic legislators, our state legislators, out to dry. There seems to be no help. It seemed to be alone. It's 2015, and I'm still hearing, oh, You're a Democrat? You know, when there's plenty of Democrats in Arizona, there's plenty of Democratic-leaning ones. So I guess I want to hear from Sheila Healy something on messaging, some ideas, some fresh ideas on messaging, and let's start with that.
Sure. So I think that this is a problem all over the place. You're definitely not wrong. We as Democrats don't respond to things in a timely enough way, right when they happen. I think that this was a really big problem when, in 2010, the Republicans managed to successfully brand Obamacare as a terrible thing. We let that go for so long that it became what it is, you know, in the media today. Fox News blasted over and over again, Obamacare is terrible, Obamacare is terrible, and people started to believe it when, in fact, it was saving lives. And I think that this year, one of the most important things that we can talk about, and again, directly at the doors and on the phones, is the best way for at least the party to communicate that.
Yeah.
It's got to be, this is what we've done. These are our accomplishments. These are the amazing things that have happened over the past 7 years, life-changing things. And this is why you should vote for our Democratic candidates. The contrast is just incredible between our candidates and their candidates.
Yes.
And for somebody in Arizona, we watch all these wonderful candidates run for office and lose.
Yes.
And we have someone like David Garcia, who has a PhD from the University of Chicago, vast experience in teaching and managing educational systems, lose to a very, very flaky person in Diane Douglas. And that's frustrating. We see our candidate for governor get trashed basically by one critical ad that blames him for raising the tuition to colleges when he was on the Board of Regents, which was voted unanimously by the regents. And yet these skewed commercials and stuff seem to have an effect, seem to move you a few points up or down. And in an election in Arizona, that's a big, big issue.
But her response is going to be they didn't vote. That if, you know, the Democrats, the vote didn't get out in 2014. Doug Ducey is governor. Fred Duvall is not, because Democrats didn't vote.
It's true. And I think something important on that is it's on us to figure out why they didn't vote and figure out how to make them vote. There's somewhat of a culture I hear as I travel the state of blame the voter. Well, we can't blame the voter. A lot of times the voter has three jobs, four kids inside. The voter has a lot of things to worry about besides voting. And when all of this negativity is coming in on the airwaves from dark money organizations, it gets discouraging. That would discourage me.
I think that's a really good point. I think a lot of people are really discouraged from voting. The system, the public battles between the parties and the candidates are so nasty. The dark money ads come in. I think it's really demoralizing. I think a lot of people just, they don't want to listen to the news anymore. They don't want to look at the candidates. They don't want to be involved in a system that seems so unresponsive to them and their needs. And you talk to them and they're intelligent people, and you understand that they have their own issues and stuff. And I would also say, just to bring this in so you can talk about it a little later, is that I was talking to some people in the Republican Party, and they feel a little bit neglected up here in Northern Arizona too, just like Northern Arizona Democrats do. That there's that Maricopa's got what, 4 million people in it, and it is, I guess Maricopa, and if you put in Phoenix, it's like a huge percentage of the population. So we want to make sure that we get a deeper involvement of the party here. And I know that that's hard to do because, you know, most people live in Phoenix area. What can be done? I mean, you're up here talking, so that's great.
Yeah.
So in building a program to the level that we'll need to do it, to win it for Ann Kirkpatrick and all of our Democratic candidates, we can't leave any area uncovered. One of the successes of the Obama campaign, of both Obama campaigns, was that every single area, whether it was deep red or purple or blue, they had an organizer, a paid organizer who was organizing, recruiting volunteers to do the work and get the message out to voters. And it's, as somebody who worked in North Florida in 2012, where a lot of voters were so discouraged and had never seen anybody from the Democratic Party come up there before, it was so important to hold the line in some of these areas. Every neighborhood, every precinct, every county has a different job to do. Sometimes it's registering voters, sometimes it's turning out voters, and other times it's persuading voters and making sure that the Democrats that are in these red areas turn out to vote and have a way to vote, and get onto the permanent early voter list. And, you know, I think that a lot of times that's endemic of folks not being able to get the money together, but more often I see it as a problem of us not working together cohesively enough. If every Democrat in the state works together this cycle, we will have enough money together to build this kind of program. But if we don't, we won't.
When I was canvassing in Camp Verde, and I encouraged the Democratic Party to go down there, it's an extremely Republican area. We went down there and we're talking to, I believe, a woman, and she said, "You're Democrats?" And I said, yeah, we're Democrats. And she said, "Well, are there any other Democrats around here?" And I looked at the sheet and I said, "There's six Democrats in the block where you live." And she went, "Oh my gosh, you know, there're that many?" I think people in particularly in conservative areas don't even know that there are other Democrats. And that certainly was Sedona's experience just a few years ago. 10 years ago, everybody thought Sedona was Republican. Of Republican voting place, it took some analysis to realize it was actually voted Democratic all the time.
Mm-hmm. 2002, you know, when Napolitano got elected, Janet Napolitano, that was kind of the wake-up call that, oh, there are Democrats here, and that the Sedona carried, you know, Napolitano. And then it's been thanks to the work of Dorr and Democrats of the Red Rocks and Democrats of the Verde Valley to some degree. There's even greater percentages, at least an awareness of Republicans. I do have this question, and this is lying. Democrats are always, or at least liberals in general, and I don't even want to use the word liberal, reasonable people. You know, if you're reasonable, that makes you liberal all of a sudden in Arizona. But lying is such a part of politics now that people have, the candidates, campaigns have no problem with telling out and out blatant lies, and the question from the Peanut Gallery is there a way to make Republicans pay for their lies? We're talking about Rick Renzi, we're talking about Tom Horn, former Attorney General of Arizona, John Hupenthal, former Superintendent of Public Instruction. All these guys left office in disgrace because of corruption and lies that they've told. And now we have currently have Diane Douglas, who there's a recall effort. Recalls are difficult because it's just that sort of negativity. But anyway, is there any camp and any plans to make these guys pay for their lies, to at least let the Republican Party know that this kind of representation is not what Arizona needs.
Let's take the governor's race. So the lie is he voted to raise tuition. And they repeat it over and over again. And the explanation, that's one sentence. And the explanation of what actually happens takes five or six sentences.
Right.
You know.
Yep.
So how do you deal with that? Because we're certainly going to see it again. And there are not as many local races this year. You know, not statewide races this year, but we're going to see it, whatever happens. Is there a way that the party, maybe not just by itself, can respond to some of these changes? Because what they're able to do is they're able to look at a whole spectrum of behavior and votes and everything else and take one little piece and take it out and twist it. And the explanation for what happened is so much longer than the charge. And we see that over and over again. And they've used it to defeat our candidates here in Arizona. And you'll have a candidate who just has a spotless record and suddenly, you
Garcia.
Know. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that is an endemic problem, and it comes back to we have to respond to things in a timely way. As these terrible things happen, as terrible, you know, legislation gets passed, whatever it is, I'm talking very generally now, we have to, as a party and as the entity that talks to all the candidates, we need to put out a message that people understand, that resonates with people's values, that connects to our overall statewide message of why we need to vote for Democrats. And we need to put it out right away. We just don't do enough of that, and we don't do a good enough job of that. And coupled with that is, you know, needing a lot of boots on the ground to develop a lot of messengers for the message. Again, the in-person message is tremendously effective. And whatever we're saying on the airwaves needs to be echoed at the doors as well.
Anytime you got a message you want to get out, let us know. We'll get it out at least on our weekly Monday show.
I will do. Thanks.
All right. All right. You got that. Anyway. All right.
When you look at Arizona politics, and I guess national politics, so much of decision making seems to be generated by fear. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at the governor has said that he wouldn't allow any, he doesn't want any Syrian refugees in Arizona. And we have these constant fear-driven campaigns.
I love Obama's response that the Republicans are afraid of widows and orphans. They had a chance to lead, and people like Ducey decided not to.
I mean, it frankly seems cowardly, but it's the majority of states controlled by, it's the majority of states, and it's all the states pretty much controlled by Republicans. And it's not so much the issue that they're afraid of the Syrian refugees who are fleeing ISIS and fleeing the fighting in Syria and the victims of all this, and we want to punish the victims because we're afraid. And I so much of our politics is based on fear. How does a candidate deal with that? Is it just meeting voters and they find out who you are and what your values are, or what can be done? Can the party do anything?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. We're seeing it, you know, in the state. We're seeing it in other states. We're seeing it on a national level. Fear is a driver for turnout for some people, and Donald Trump, for example, has really capitalized on that. On people's fears of immigrants, of all these things that have made our country great, and he's using it to motivate a certain kind of voter to be excited. Or so I think that, you know, ultimately we need to make people comfortable with our candidates, as you say. Ann Kirkpatrick has an incredible record. She is fighting a really important fight here in Arizona, and we need to go to people directly and espouse a message that connects us, the messenger, and Ann Kirkpatrick to their values.
Sheila Haley, are you ready to talk about the Latino vote in Arizona? Your friend came from Texas, obviously a huge Latino population there, Latin population there. You just stood in front of an all-white crowd at the old Sedona Bar and Grill in Sedona and gave a great Democratic speech and have responded to a lot of questions. What can we do? What can you do? What's the Democratic Party going to do? Have you had a chance? I know you've only been here 3 months. Have you had a chance to study or figure out how to get the Latino vote out?
Definitely. So that's going to be really important. I think that there are a lot of things being tested right now that we're not doing yet as Democrats. There was a really interesting academic study that happened in Texas where a group of people, it wasn't connected to the party at all, but a group of folks went to a sample size of 800 doors. And they knocked on the door and this was focused in Latino neighborhoods. They knocked on the door, and instead of having a 3-minute conversation at the door, they had a 12-minute conversation at the door. And they never mentioned the name of the candidate. And then at the end of the conversation, the voter, the potential voter, was given a funny-looking piece of paper. And 2 weeks later, another person came and knocked on their door. They'd say, "Hey, remember me? I'm the person who gave you the funny-looking piece of paper." And they'd say, "What do you remember about our conversation?" And the voter would repeat back what they remembered. And the canvasser would then say, "Do you know who stands for these values? Democrats. And our Democratic candidate, X." So there are a lot of academic studies that are happening in America right now that we don't incorporate into running an expansive campaign. And I think we should. And I think we should pay attention to them, because I think it's the only way that we're gonna figure out how to affect the vote with a direct voter contact program more than 3 to 5%.
A research-based campaign would be something different for Arizona, definitely.
I think that's a great idea. I think what we see, and I don't know whether Mike agrees with me, but is that we see no money and effort hardly going into the Democratic Party as an organization. And Gary would say because it doesn't really stand for anything in itself. And then we have an election year where everybody pours in money and pours in effort to elect a candidate. And it's a zero-sum game. You either win it or you lose it. And so all the money spent on the advertising for candidate X, if the candidate loses, all that money's lost. None of the money is going to build the party year after year to build an identity and a message for the Democratic Party. So that there's, I think the Republicans that I know have a sense, they may be wrong sense of what the Republican Party is, or it's shifting now so far to the right that, as Mike said, a lot of people are getting uncomfortable with it. But there's an identity there that Democrats don't seem to have. We're the guys who respond to the extreme right-wing radical stuff by being calmer and more reasonable and more nuanced. But that's not an identity for people to contribute to the party and be involved in the party organization year after year. And we haven't seen money coming from the national parties as much for the party since Howard Dean left the leadership. In other words, that 50-state strategy seems to have faded some.
So I totally agree. I think that the party needs more than a facelift. The party needs to really redefine the way it operates. And, you know, in the wake of Citizens United, in the wake of all of this dark money floating around, the party has become not the natural entity to be the driving force in the state and make sure everything is going in one direction, is going in a good direction, and that really good work is happening to elect all of our candidates. We need to struggle to add value in that every day. And that's how we then make the party relevant again. And honestly, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think we have a real opportunity here to turn the party into something that it's never been before by building a program that we've never seen in Arizona. I think we add value and we create a party again. We create that structure by ensuring that we add value every day and getting some candidates elected.
See, the Democratic Party, I don't know, Mike and Gary, Democratic Party often seems like a party that produces candidates every 2 years or every 4 years. But it doesn't seem like there's really a party there that's doing this. It seems like the candidates are running, they're sort of free agents, that's the American system. I agree with it. But there doesn't seem to be a core meaning to the party itself. And so we have all the candidates appearing, and I know, maybe I'm wrong, Mike, but they appear here in Arizona to be running, they run their own campaigns, they raise their own money, they have their own statisticians and stuff analyzing things. What can the party do to become more central as a party? You're the leader, manager, CEO, I guess, CF, something around
all those things.
All those deals. What can the party do to become more constant in so it's not just every 2 years, you know, our candidates go to the voters.
That's a good thing. I want to add to that. You know, you got the executive director of the Arizona Democratic Party here, but we have a state chair also. You guys working together? Can you guys do something together to do what Steve's talking about?
Absolutely. I think you have a very fair point in that the party everywhere has become kind of invisible next to the campaigns. And this year, we have some amazing candidates, and I want to do everything I can to add value to their campaigns and to make sure that they get elected. And I think that, you know, in thinking about the definition of a party, the party to me is the natural entity to bring everybody together to the same table.
Correct.
And run one cohesive program. I think that's the best place for the party to add value, and that's what I'm going to be committed to this year, and as is the chair.
Great. Well, I hope we wish you all the luck in the world. We want to add, before we run out of time, we don't have a lot of time left, we want to add Democrats of the Red Rocks, one of our sponsoring organizations, de facto Democrats of the Verde Valley. They invited Sheila Healy up here today, executive director of the Democratic Party, who's going to come back.
Absolutely. It's beautiful
right
up here.
All right. Yeah. Congratulations on coming up to this part of the state.
Yeah. Do you have anything you want to sum up? What's your, you know, you have, when Democrats look at it, we look at all these wonderful candidates. In the last election, I think we had about as good candidates as you could come up. People say, oh, you had to hold your nose to vote for them. But you didn't. They were great. And they all lost, Sheila. And so you're talking to Democrats that need to be convinced that they have a chance. And you've got, what, 1 minute?
It's going to be hard to get somebody to door because of the losses. We had great candidates that lost. And how can you help that out?
All right. In 2 minutes, Sheila, answer all our questions.
Great. So they're big questions, but I think there's a simple answer. Our candidates were great last cycle. I certainly don't think you needed to hold your nose to vote for any of them. I think our candidates are amazing this cycle. And I think what's going to be really important is to capitalize on the fact that this is going to be a higher turnout election year naturally because it's a presidential year.
That's true.
And this is one of the rare opportunities we get every 4 years, where we need to seize on that momentum, capitalize on it, and build a program like we have never built before in Arizona. And register the voters, knock on the doors, make the phone calls, and get all the candidates to a table, and start moving in one direction as Democrats.
Give us some contact info in case somebody wants to get involved. How can they get a hold of you?
Absolutely. You can shoot me an email, shealy, S-H-E-A-L-Y, at azdemsingular.org.
Okay.
If you're interested in getting involved and if you're interested in donating to the party, please contact me.
Yeah, if you're tired of the way things are, get involved with Arizona Democratic politics. Real quickly, we're talking about this interview, as all our shows, can be found on vvid.org. vvid.org is where you can find this show and all our shows. I want to thank Sheila Healy for coming up today. I do want to talk about when next time we are going to talk about the presidential preference primary in March and the problems and the whole idea of independent voters, Democratic voters, Republican voters in the state of Arizona and all of those issues. It's going to be, I'm predicting that the headlines in the next year are going to be that a full third of the electorate of Arizona will not be able to participate in the presidential primary election in March because the parties restrict independent voters. The Democrats got to open up to independents. Republicans got to open up to independents. Both of them would be great. Please remember this show, other shows, vvid.org. This is Democratic Perspective. Catch us again next week. Thank you.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.